David Grenier is a businessman from Tacoma, Washington, and for the past 20 years, he has been haunted by the memory of one day back in 1994.
It was just a normal day, normal sunny day, coming back from lunch thinking I was going to be late for a 2:30 meeting.
Three teenagers approached Grenier and forced him into his car. They robbed him, forced him to empty his bank account, and then they dumped him in a secluded location.
And so they bound my hands and my feet, three circles of duct tape. They put me in the trunk, and I had tape over my eyes and tape over my mouth.
Kidnap victim David Grenier. His kidnappers were 14-year-old Jeff Coates and two 17-year-old friends. Coates was quickly apprehended and brought to trial. The story of his conviction and release is part of a bigger story about rehabilitation in the United States, about whether criminals can change. It's the subject of a radio special airing Monday night on KUOW. One of the researchers who produced the special was Catherine Beckett, a sociology professor at the University of Washington. Thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
Tell us more about Jeff Coates and what he did.
Jeff Coates now is working as a real estate agent in the Puget Sound area and doing quite well. But at the age of 14, he was not doing so well. He had a very troubled childhood. He lived in extreme poverty, had abusive parents, and many of the other problems that kids like that face. He was placed in 62 different foster care situations between the years of 11 years old and 14 years old. And when he was 14, he committed this crime.
So he'd already been in the system for a lot.
For 3 years, yeah.
So when it came to Jeff Coates being convicted, being sentenced, what was the thinking on rehabilitating this 14-year-old kid?
It's interesting. If you listen to the documentary, the report from one of the forensic psychologists who evaluated Jeff, he goes out of his way to say this kid is actually the victim in this case. He himself has been not only victimized by his parents, but also by the system that was meant to protect him. And he goes on to say that Jeff is completely habitable and doesn't even require rehabilitation. In contrast, the prosecutor and apparently the judge determined that the state had tried to sort of fix him and that it had failed and therefore he was unfixable.
And as it turned out, that kind of was reflected in the sentence. Jeff Coates got 20 years.
Absolutely, yeah.
What happened to him in prison?
He had a tough time. I mean, imagine 14-year-old kid walking into one of the most stressful and dangerous places on earth. And he was told very early on, as he describes in the documentary, that he had a few options. He could fight, he could submit to sexual assault, or he could either run away or kill himself. Those were his options. He chose to fight. He got into a lot of fights. He lost all of them. He experienced some pretty traumatic injuries as a result. But he did establish a reputation as someone who would not go down easily, and so he was not ultimately sexually assaulted, which was his goal, was to avoid that.
How did he eventually get out of jail and become the apparently successful person he is today?
It's quite a story. He was, he was a pretty angry young guy for his teenage years and into his early 20s. He was kind of working the system, hustling in prison, dealing with contraband and all sorts of stuff. And then he learned that his mother, who had never visited him in prison or written to him or anything, was dying of cancer. And he had the option of going to visit her and see her on her deathbed, which he chose to do, paid his own way, $700. And he spent his last hour with her on her deathbed. And on the way, he describes having this sort of a moment of clarity that he had two choices. He could either tell her that she was one of the worst parents known to humanity and that it was sort of her fault that he landed where he was, or he could give her a nice hour and send her off peacefully. And he elected to do the latter in what I think is one of the most generous acts I'd heard about in a long time. And it felt really good to him. And he came out saying, I want to be that person. And then from then on out, that was his goal, and he worked hard at it.
Well, the court system eventually decided to spring Jeff Coates, but Jeff wrote a letter to his victim, David Grenier, saying he was sorry. Do you think Jeff rehabilitated himself?
I do. I've spent a lot of time with Jeff now, and I think he's been working hard at it for a very long time. I think he worked hard on it starting after he said goodbye to his mother and sort of, he says he doesn't use the word forgave, but he decided to let go of the grudge. He immersed himself almost immediately in any classes he could find. He became a sort of an IT whiz and developed a lot of IT skills. He dedicated himself to helping other prisoners acquire those skills. And he also became a real estate kind of guru. He read over 100 books on real estate while in prison. And that's what he's doing now.
And how about David Grenier, his victim? Did he accept that apology that Jeff wrote in the letter to him for having kidnapped him and subjected him to this terrifying experience?
His feelings are complicated, which I think is understandable. He says that his initial reaction to Jeff's apology letter was positive, that he, you know, appreciated the gesture and was inclined to believe that Jeff was sincere. But he faced a dilemma because none of his friends or family had the same interpretation. They sort of thought, oh, Jeff must be trying to work the system somehow. And So he didn't know what to think or feel, I think, after that initial apology letter. I do think that one of the most satisfying things that's come out of this project is that I think he is in a better position today to truly believe that Jeff's apology is sincere.
One story is one story, but do you think that the story of Jeff Coates says something about our justice system and rehabilitation and punishment?
I do, and that's why we chose to make the documentary. The criminal justice system had largely given up on the idea of rehabilitation, and this goes back to the 1980s and 90s when, actually as far back as the 1970s, a couple of criminologists had done some studies indicating that they thought the evidence showed that there were no successful rehabilitation programs out there. Turns out they were wrong. The kind of tools that we have today to do those kinds of meta-analyses, where they were looking at 237 studies, I believe, they weren't able to see, because they didn't have the right methodological tools, that actually many of those programs did produce results. Also, they were assuming that there should be sort of one type of program that worked for everybody, and then we know that's not true today, that there are different types of programs that can be effective with different people in different kinds of circumstances facing different challenges. So at the time, though, this idea that nothing worked in terms of rehabilitation became popular, and a lot of correctional systems even abandoned the word corrections because they said, we're not in the business of reforming people. We're in the business of locking people up. And that's what we do. That's all we do. And in that context, many states, including Washington, got rid of their parole boards and moved to what's called a determinant sentencing system, where you sort of get what you get from the judge. And it doesn't matter if you become a saint in prison, you're not getting out much earlier.
Has that changed at all?
Some states have brought back parole boards. Washington State has not. So today, if you get a life sentence, that's life. It doesn't matter what you do in prison. And a lot of people have concerns about that kind of setup because it actually doesn't reward the people who do work hard to transform their lives. And we have a lot of people in prison today who could probably very safely be released.
If that's the best thinking on this, why is the justice system lagging behind the best thinking on how to deal with people in prison?
Unfortunately, it's pretty common for criminal justice policy not to reflect sort of social science findings or research findings. So that isn't that unusual. I think there's a lot of inertia. We built this system up to be this way, to keep people for very long periods of time, and it's hard to dismantle that kind of system. And I think it's also risky, right? You never know for sure. So the one person you do let out on parole could be that one guy, couldn't really mess things up. So there's a lot of sort of thinking, I think, that, you know, why take the risk? But there are good answers to that question. It's very, very, very expensive to lock this many people up for this long. And I think society arguably loses out because many of the people I know, for example, in prison, would very much like to dedicate the rest of their life to making things better, helping at-risk youth and so forth, but don't have that opportunity.
Catherine Beckett is a sociology professor at the University of Washington and one of the producers of a new documentary about Jeff Coates and David Grenier and the crime that changed their lives. You can hear it Monday evening at 11 o'clock on KUOW.